hey, you do what you got to do. Yeah, it was a dummy, but it was a convincing dummy. Yeah,
fairly convincing, except for the whole, you know, yoga move there.
Again, it's possible that a human body can do that. It shouldn't, but it's possible.
Right, possible, but not probable, yeah.
Right, right. The human body should not do that. If your body has done that, two things. One, I'm very sorry. That sounds painful. And two, if you haven't already consulted a doctor, please do so immediately.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't think they could. They're in the middle of a battle. So.
What's poppin', y'all? Welcome to Post Finale. I'm your host, Ankit Madeira. I'm an actor and a musician who hasn't seen a lot of films, so to make my friends happy and potentially provide a new perspective on some popular films, I am on a quest to change that. I'm not alone, however. This week, I am joined by Bob Lament from Static Radio. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining and reaching out, saying that you'd be interested in joining.
Oh, yeah. This should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So this week we are talking about Terminator, the first one. Before I get into what I know about the film / the franchise, when was the first time that you watched the film? Do you have any remembrance? Like, what drew you to this film?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, I remember. Now, you know, I seen this film when it was at the theaters. So it's been a while. This would be what, 84. So yeah, I was a youngin, and in 84, and I went to the theaters to see this, and I saw it mainly because it looked like a really cool science fiction movie, and I had been aware of Arnold Schwarzenegger prior to this because he was Conan, right? And so I'm like, wow, that should be cool with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I didn't realize what it would become until I saw it. So it was kind of a little bit different than I was expecting.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely confused on what's going on. That is for sure. But yeah, wonderful. Yeah. So you saw it in theaters. Did you watch the other films in theaters? I know that there are at least three, maybe more.
Oh, yeah. I saw them all. I remember. Yeah. The franchise for Terminator, well, it became a franchise after this movie, right? But, you know, before that, it was just kind of this weird little, you know, science fiction movie that was actually quite low budget, I think, at the time. And so as soon as I saw that one, I was hooked, and I think I've seen all of them but Terminator Salvation, which is the one with Christian Bale. I think, is that the one? Anyway, I didn't see that one at the theater.
Your guess is as good as mine.
It wasn't the same. So
yeah, fair enough. So here's what I know about this film. Spoiler alert. Not a lot. So I know that Arnold Schwarzenegger is in the film, and he is the Terminator as far as I know. I would be very surprised if he isn't. I know that at some point he says, I'll be back. Mm-hmm. Don't know when that happens. Don't even know if it's in this film. I just know that it is said. So really flying by the seat of my pants here. I think it has something to do with cyborgs. It's set in the future. I do know that. And like the future of 1984 when
right,
it came out.
Yeah,
it was So I don't know when in the future. I just know that it was set in the future. And I'm pretty sure, like I said, Arnold is the Terminator. He may be a cyborg. I'm still confused on that aspect, if that may or may not be true.
Well, he certainly is naked at the beginning.
Yep. We definitely do see that. Yeah. Did not expect that. Oh, boy. So, yeah. Why don't we just jump straight into it? So, pretty much where we're at. We start in L.A. of 2029 A.D. And my immediate reaction was, that's in 5 years. Why does it feel like it should be further?
Well, because they made it in 1984. So 2029 seemed like forever, you know? it was going to be forever before we got to that. You know, that's like, they're like sitting around, I'm sure, in the writer's room going, well, what date could we be at? Well, we don't want to be too far, you know, 2029, let's do that. And then, yeah, probably just how it happened.
I mean, hey, you got a solid like 45 years there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you did well. You picked distance. One thing that does always confuse me, though, is like some of these sci-fi movies, and I don't know if like there's a reason why it couldn't be too far in the future. Maybe that'll be revealed. Kind of like how in Back to the Future, he goes 15 years in the past, mm-hmm. but then 15 years, it's not 15, it's 30 years in the past, and then 30 years in the future. So, yeah, that still helps us out in terms of like it makes sense of why it was the 30. I don't know if there's a reason that like 45, I don't know, 45 seems like a very specific number of years.
That's a good question. I don't know that I've heard any stories or read anything that says that, you know, that's why they picked that. Oh, I think a lot of times they pick these things because they don't want to be so far ahead that, you know, they can't use current, you know, technologies, right? So they want to have, budget wise, you need to have things that you can get your hands on. And so, you know, but this one, basically it was, you know, at the beginning, it's like a burned out stuff, you know, it's dystopia.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to get a bunch of junk cars. You know, it's cheap.
I feel like it's not that difficult. Go to the junkyard and just be like, hi, we will take things off of your hands. And they'll be like, thank you.
Yeah, they'll be like, yeah, smash them more and bring them back, I guess. But so my guess, yeah, I think that's probably why they went for that, was just because it's going to, you know, budgetarily, just knowing now after the fact that it was not a super high budget movie. I'm sure that played into it, and knowing the background of James Cameron. I mean, James Cameron came from, you know, the cheap movie making school, and so, you know, he's making movies on, you know, shoestrings before this as well. So it's not like they had like a bunch of money. I think Piranha 2 was one of his first movies he ever made, which was a real low budget kind of thing. So,
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize that this was James Cameron, and then his name popped up. I mean, this isn't a spoiler, so like, it's fine. But like, yeah, I didn't realize that this was also one of his. And then as I was watching some of it, I was like, it tracks. Lots of explosions, big lights.
Yep. Like, yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Piranha 2, I'm confirming it for myself here. Yeah, Piranha 2 was the first, he wrote that screenplay. And so I think he also directed it along with some others. They kind of shared directing, it looks like, on the IMDb page. So, yeah. You know, so this was only the second movie, so he probably didn't have a huge cache of money to dip his hands into for that one either. So
makes sense.
Yeah,
makes complete sense. So, yeah, we see that it's 2029, and we see a ship that is firing a gun. It has like one of those light guns, plasma blaster things from Star Wars. And there's a soldier who dives for cover. And then we see some text. And this is what the text reads, ladies and gentlemen. The machines rose from the ashes of the nuclear fire. Their war to exterminate mankind had raged for decades. But the final battle would not be fought in the future. It would be fought here, in our present, tonight.
Spooky, huh?
Spooky? Interesting?
Yeah.
I had to remind ourselves that the present was 1984 for a second, but we're good. And I was like, okay, this is interesting, which I have thoughts about this, and I'll talk about it at the end a little bit. But it does set it up of like, okay, this is why we're in 1984, not in 2029. Cool. Sounds good. Here we go. So we then get the title cards, they start to roll through. I have definitely heard this soundtrack before, at minimum. I don't remember if I've played the music from the soundtrack, but I know that I've heard it before because the soundtrack started playing and I was like, I recognize this.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Yeah. And James Cameron wrote the soundtrack.
I didn't realize that he wrote the soundtrack. I mean, yeah. I was not paying very close attention
that,
to
that
the
music
credits.
That dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Yeah, he put that together for the movie. Again, this is cheap, right? So all on a budget, and he has some, you know, skills, and it kind of fits the mood, right? So it's very synthy because that was the 80s anyway, very synthesizer heavy, but yeah.
Nice. Wonderful. So, yeah, the background of the credits, though, gave me, like, this old screensavers that we used to have.
Yeah.
Of just, like, a consistent, like, rolling little piece of thing. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I don't know why. It was just giving me screensaver vibes, and I was like, yes, I'm here for it. It's peaceful. I love it. Great.
The interesting thing would be because this came before the screensavers ever were anything, because at this time there wasn't anything, and they stole it from him.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
I would 100% believe that that's the way. I just have more experience with screensavers than this.
That's funny. Yeah, so they had to borrow from this because there wasn't screensavers at this point. So
yeah,
there's no CGI in this movie. This movie is all it's all miniatures and real things.
Which I find very interesting. Like, I really like seeing some of the times where you're like, okay, how are you doing this effect without CGI? And I think that was a big thing with Oppenheimer recently as well. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why it was such a big deal that they didn't use CGI, is because now CGI is such a norm. That going back to not using it is like, oh, like that's something impressive.
Well, yeah, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So yeah, at the beginning, the you see the things, the laser cannon firing. You see, you know, treads. You see a foot come down, I think, at some point and crush a skull or something, and all of that was done in miniatures, most likely, for a lot of that, except for when you could tell it was a full, you know, crushed cars and things like that, and people running around the junkyard or what have you.
Fair enough. You know what? They may have even just filmed at a junkyard. We were saying that they like went to a different location. They were on a budget. They didn't take anything. No. They just booked out the junkyard and were like, hi, we're just going to blow up some of your stuff. Cool.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, they'll be the junkyard's like, I don't care. Yeah,
it was the 80s. They definitely didn't care.
Yeah, well, there's more to that than you know. And this, I'm trying to think. I don't want to get too far ahead, but I'll remember. I'll file that away for later.
Sounds good. Much appreciated. So we open up. We're at a construction site, and there is a truck that is picking up some bins. The driver, he's a cool guy, and we know that because he has a hat and a cigar, which is almost completely out. But, like, you know, he's got that, you know, coolness to him.
What the hell? I think that's what he says.
He's just like, what the hell? The truck suddenly stops. The driver's very confused. And the street starts to get littered with papers, probably from the trash that he's picking up. And the truck is then hit with lightning. And then I just wrote, God, I love old school lightning effects. And then nothing happens to the truck or the guy inside. And I feel like I'm more fascinated about that with the lightning than just lightning, like, appearing randomly.
Mm-hmm. I think didn't he jump out, though, at some point? Didn't he?
Yeah.
In a wide shot, I think he kind of skedaddles at some point during all that.
Well, I mean, like, literally the next thing is, like, he gets out and then, like, runs away. But still nothing happens to the truck or him. So, you know.
Actually, that's not true. Something does happen to the truck.
Something happens to the truck. Did I miss something with the truck?
Well, keep going.
Missed something with the truck. So he gets out. There's a ton of smoke. We see a shirtless Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I was just like, yep, he's buff. And then he's looking around. He's just arrived on this planet is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And he walks out. He sees the vast city beneath him. I was like, oh, he's not just shirtless, he's nude.
At least just before he walks away. So you have to, it's one of those kind of, you'll miss it. It's a very small detail. So he appears right next to the garbage truck. Well, when he appears, there's kind of like something around him when he appears, right? It's kind of a spherical thing. And if you notice, there is an indentation in the ground. And then he takes out part of the truck and it's glowing. So you'll see little pieces of the truck are missing and they're glowing like they're hot.
Okay.
But it's a real quick shot because he's just there and then they are on to him, you know, standing up and looking out over Los Angeles shortly after that. So, but yeah, he does basically this. He comes down, he appears, I don't know how you want to call it. He comes in this sphere. And with the sphere, it basically carves out everything around it, which is just a little bit of the truck and a little bit of the ground.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. So if you watch that part again, you'll see the truck is glowing in certain spots. It looks like it's glowing, and that's where the bubble that he came in touched the cut through the truck a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah,
I appreciate the attention to detail.
Huh,
I
mean, I've watched it many, many times. So,
I'm noticing things like, oh, look, it's screensavers, and you're bringing fun facts. All in good teamwork. Thank
no, that's okay. Yeah, I don't have. you have the perspective for the screensavers, which I didn't even think about. So yeah.
Yeah. So we then see some punks. This feels like the best way to describe them. They have leather jackets. One has spiky blue hair. The other's looking through a telescope. And the spiky blue hair one smashes his bottle and says, it's my turn, and then shoves his friend out of the way. The friend doesn't seem too happy, doesn't want to give up like his spot on the telescope. And just then, Arnold walks up. And the blonde friend, this is the best way I have to describe them, ladies and gentlemen. Like, they're never given names.
Right. Just punks. Punk one,
yeah,
punk two.
They're just punks. So he gets pushed away. It's the one that's gotten pushed away. Asks the others after seeing Arnold, hey, what's wrong with this picture? And the punks are messing with Arnold a bit. Arnold just responds in a very monotone voice. No facial expressions. Absolute peak acting. Just going... So the punks are like, oh, it's a nice day for a walk. Nice day for a walk. Wash day tomorrow. Nothing clean, right? Nothing clean, right? Like, it is the most monotone thing.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. It's just a lovely introduction. And I feel more and more confident that he is some type of cyborg-ish robot thing. So I'm feeling confident about this. So then... what happens is, like, the blonde one, he's snapping his fingers and really drives home the punk kid image. So, like, you know, he's got the role. He understood the assignment. And he says, I have a feeling... Well, so I wrote down, I have a feeling these three are not going to be relevant in about 30 seconds. And guess what? Spoiler alert, they ain't relevant in about 30 seconds. So... Arnold tells them to give them his clothes. And obviously the punks... say "fuck you, asshole," and bring out switchblades. Didn't see that one coming, but sure. They bring out the switchblades. Arnold knocks the first guy down, tosses the second guy backwards into a fence, and then the third guy, which is the blonde guy, he picks him up, starts to strangle him, and then reaches in and pulls out his heart, killing him.
Yeah, I think he gets somewhere in there. He gets stabbed, or at least attempted to be stabbed.
Yeah, the punks do try to stab. Doesn't go well. Yeah, he gets killed instead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The funny thing is you mentioned there's no relevance. There's actually not in the movie itself. There's no relevance to these people other than they're setting up Arnold as a murderer, basically.
Right.
But... There's back end relevance because one of the punks, I think it's the guy with the tire track stuff on his face or something like that.
Sure.
That is Bill Paxton, who would become a Hollywood celebrity of sorts himself. And he is good friends with James Cameron. And he was in Titanic with Cameron. He's been in a bunch of James Cameron's movies because those guys were buddies. And nice. He had that one little part in Terminator. But he went on to be in The Predator 2 and Twister and all kinds of movies throughout the 90s into the 2000s. He passed away not too long ago. But yeah, he himself became quite the Hollywood celebrity. And that was one of his early appearances. He was in Aliens, which is a Cameron produced, directed movie. Yeah. Nice. Isn't that wild? When you watch that again, you have to think about, well, if you haven't necessarily seen all these movies, but you may have seen a couple, and that's Bill Paxton, though.
Okay. Yeah. I think I've seen one or two that you named, but no guarantee.
He's been in a bunch more. I mean, but that's, it's interesting because he had a long history with Cameron. I think he was in almost every James Cameron movie in some capacity. He just like bit parts and so forth because they were just kind of friends, which is interesting. I mean,
hey, it's helpful. If it gets you a job, it gets you a job. Make friends.
Yeah, he was probably pretty happy. I mean, he had a good career with
even if it's not like a big role, it's just like, oh yeah, like I'm friends with James Cameron. It's like, oh, James has a new movie. Cool. And it's like, also for James, it's just like, oh, we need someone to play this part. I got a guy. Don't worry about it.
I know,
like,
a guy. He's available. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He's available. We'll figure out a time. Like, we got a guy. You don't need to cast this role.
That's
like,
right. Don't worry about it.
Like, there we go. So the first guy, he's the one that got punched and the one that we've been talking about. He gets up, terrified, starts to strip.
Yep.
All right, Arnold. He's the killer. This is what we have learned, as you said. So we're then in an alley. It's a dirty, filthy alley. There's a homeless guy sitting there, and the lightning returns. There is wind as well. There might have been the first time. There probably was, because all the papers are flying around. But after a big flash, we get another nude guy dropping in, and this time he's in the fetal position.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold kind of landed with like a superhero pose, kind of like with the one knee down, like, you know, the fist on the pavement kind of deal, like that kind of superhero-y pose. Not the second one. The second one is in pure fetal position.
Yep.
So at first I was like, wait, is this the blonde guy that Arnold just killed? No, it's not. I just thought that it might be in a quick shot. But he's in a lot of pain. He's very confused on where he is. He sees a piece of paper fall, and then he starts to run away. No idea if that piece of paper was important so far. It doesn't seem like it has been. I highly doubt it will be. So he turns and runs into our homeless friend, who we saw earlier. And the homeless friend is just like, hey, buddy, did you just see that real bright light?
Yeah.
Yeah. My immediate thought was, bye bye, Mr. Homeless Guy. You were fun and you brought joy to the screen. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. I think the his purpose was to set up that, and I'm sure if you know the name of the character yet, but his purpose was to set up that guy appeared, right?
Yeah.
From someplace else out of nowhere. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't know either of their names. So literally for this entire episode, I'm going to be calling them Arnold because he's never been given a name. I'm assuming he's the Terminator, but I've been wrong multiple times before. So I'm not like jumping to any conclusions claiming that he is. So yeah, I'm just going to call him Arnold. And I guess we'll just call this guy Blondie because I have no idea what his name is.
Blondie. Hey, Blondie.
He has blonde hair, so yeah. We're calling him Blondie for this episode, at least until I learn his name.
So we'll say he's the other guy that came from someplace else as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The less the muscular guy. Less muscular guy.
Not as buff. So,
yeah.
The cop car pulls up as Blondie is on some
Before
pants.
We move on to that, so
oh, yeah.
The other thing I just remembered as you were talking about it, because you were talking about the one guy seemed to appear in pain, whereas Arnold didn't appear in pain when he was there. But both of them, I don't know if you remember, it's hard to tell depending on how you were watching it, they were both kind of smoking. Both of them were.
There was a lot of smoke.
Yeah. Whenever they appeared. So it was like, you know, they were hot or they were cold or something was going on where their bodies were literally looked like they were smoking, mm-hmm. which is interesting, which may give you a clue there because one person's in pain, the other person's not. So
we'll see. Yeah. But yeah, so the cop car pulls up, Blondie's putting on some pants. The cops get out of the car. They start to chase him and, you know, fair play, Blondie. Fair play. Run from the cops if you are found in this situation in very specific things. Usually people don't run from the cops. Please don't. That seems like a bad life choice. So.
But he stole somebody's pants, didn't he?
Yeah.
You haven't got to that part.
No. He stole the pants. I understand. I mean, like literally the next line is the homeless guy going, "The son of a bitch stole my pants." Not going to lie. Uh-huh. I thought he was dead.
Now I think he was supposed to be like a drunk bum or something.
Yeah, he was drunk and just in the alleyway. I just thought that he would have died. Because at this time, I'm thinking that Blondie and Arnold are on a team. Mm-hmm. Like, they're together.
Well, yeah, but the Blondie didn't kill the guy.
No, he didn't.
His pants.
Just took his pants. You know, interesting that he took the pants first, but also makes sense. I don't know. So we then have a chase down of Blondie. The music's intense. They're trying to corner him with the car. He heads down an alleyway. A random rogue car pops up. It almost hits Blondie, but he barrel rolls over it with ease. The cop doesn't need to. The cop can just scoot by because it's not like it trapped the cop or anything. Blondie then breaks through a gate and suddenly disappears. The cop can't seem to find him. It's eerie. And the cop is shining his light, not sure where he is. Blondie jumps out from the shadows. He attacks the cop. And then the gun goes off. And Blondie grabs the gun and aims it at the cop. And asks, what's the date?
Mm-hmm.
The 12th of May. It's a Thursday. And then he says, the year.
But the year? What year is
before,
it?
Yeah, before answering, we see the cop car is slowly coming towards them down the alley in the slowest pursuit possible. And, you know, the cop does seem a bit confused by this question. And it makes sense for Blondie to be asking the question because he's not from this world or this time. We've seen that he has come from a different time. He just materialized. So makes complete sense. Wasn't confused on why he was asking. I did have the same question, though, because they say it's the present. But then is that 1984 or is that when they filmed it? Like, we never get an answer officially of what year it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing 1984, but don't officially know yet. Mm-hmm. So he runs away. He's blocked by another car, and then he breaks into a building. And he's running through the building. Did a nice little spin move to get around a corner. It was elegant. And he keeps running. He's crawling as well. He's very smart. He's using his surroundings to stay out of sight, using different levels. So, like, he crawls, he runs, he sneaks around. He's doing a very good job of staying out of sight from the cops. And it seems like we're now in some type of clothing or fashion store, so Blondie's able to get dressed. He grabs a jacket, he puts them on, he continues running around the store. We see him find some shoes. The cops are still looking. They are very bad at their jobs. And we see that Blondie very specifically puts on some black Nike sneakers that have a white Nike logo with a white stripe around the ankle and a white stripe around the base. Mm-hmm. And two thoughts popped into my head. Number one, product placement.
Yeah.
Number two, was this an actual shoe that Nike had in the 1980s that was like a really popular shoe?
Yes.
Okay.
It was cool. Hugely popular. This would be, you know, pre Air Jordan and all these kind of sneakers that people collect now. So this would have been like proto collectible sneaker. When this came out, it was, everybody wanted it. right? And nobody could get it.
Okay.
Yeah. But there was no sneaker collecting thing happening then. That wasn't a thing. And so this was kind of like this. And then, you know, and you mentioned Back to the Future before, and they had the shoes that laced themselves in Back to the Future too. So those all were kind of things that helped to bring forward, oddly enough, the collection of sneakers in the future, because they didn't have the self-lacing ones. They do now, but they didn't at that time. But just to give you an example. But yeah, those shoes, everybody wanted those shoes. It was like the coolest shoe you could have, basically.
Cool.
Yeah. Very. I know it's weird, but you don't think of it. But yeah, that was all proto collecting shoes stuff.
Yeah. I don't understand the whole collecting shoes business hob. Like, it's just not me. I'm not a sneakerhead. Props to anybody that is. Like, that's your world. Enjoy. Just doesn't make sense to me. But hey, you do you.
Yeah. No, definitely. But yeah, it's weird. I personally don't understand it that much either, but I know that it's a big thing now. And I remember being a kid then, I'm like, everybody is like, oh my gosh, did you see he had the Nike, whatever they were called? I can't remember off the top of my head, but the Velcro, you know, sneakers. And there was no Velcro in tennis shoes or anything like that back then. That was like one of the first ones.
Yeah.
It was insane. So.
Okay. Yeah. For me, Velcro was pretty common by the time I was growing up. I do remember like light up shoes were like a big thing. I don't know when light up shoes came out. They probably came out years in ahead. But like me growing up, like everyone wanted light up shoes. And I remember distinctively one time I got written up at school because like our school had a dress code. And I accidentally wore my light up shoes to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the coolest kid, but I also got in trouble. So,
yeah.
You know, it put it into perspective. Yeah, that was like my fad in shoes. And like, I do like shoes. I just don't get the whole buying and selling and not wearing super expensive sneakers. I don't know. Not my world, but props to anyone that gets it. So he has the shoes on. He's now clothed and prepped, and he's hiding in a photography booth, and he dashes out as the sirens get louder. He goes out the door, but there's a cop car that comes up to the door, so he runs upstairs up a non-working escalator, specifically probably non-working because unlike nowadays they actually turned off the lights at the store.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wild concept.
And
the escalator. Mm-hmm. Hey, department stores, maybe, I don't know, save some energy, shut off your lights when you go home for the night and you close up. H&M, you don't need to have lights on 24 hours when you're closed. Mm-hmm. Make it obvious. It's nice and helpful from a distance to just know I haven't made it in time. Like, I don't understand why people just leave the lights on and just don't do anything with it.
I don't know. Yeah. No, I suppose, you know, the other interesting thing is the timing of this is there wasn't a lot of 24-hour kind of situations back then. Everything closed. You would rarely find anything open, especially like clothing or anything like that, for sure. Not like a convenience store, but, you know.
Exactly. I mean, like, even now living in London, I mean, London, everything closes at like 11 at the latest, unless you're trying to go to like a club. But like most things close at 11. And if you're not going to a club, like I don't normally go to a club. Like, it's just like, hi, there are limited options after that, depending on where you are. And especially like clothing stores or anything, like most of those are closing by like 8, 9. I think maybe the latest I know of, like, one that you could claim is a clothing store that closes later is, I think, like, the nearby grocery store, which has a clothing section in it, closes at, like, 10 or 11. So, like, you know, it's things like that, right? But even then, like, they're closing, but then still leaving the lights on when the store is shut. So, I don't know. I feel like the big department store should just turn off their lights.
Yeah.
So Do the beautiful thing. Get motion sensor lights. Like, they'll turn off automatically. No one's in there.
Yeah.
Great.
I don't think those were even a thing back then.
Oh, yeah. No, I would be very surprised if they were. So he dashes out. He goes up the non-working escalator, and he climbs out the side of the building, I'm assuming through a window, down the fire escape, and to a cop car, where he reaches in and he grabs a rifle. My reaction was, I'm sorry, what? But then also, based on his previous actions, this doesn't, like, surprise me that much. Which is surprised that, like, he would just take it straight from the cop car, or that the cops would just leave it in the car. I feel like I'm more surprised that the cops just left a rifle in an unlocked car.
Well, you would be surprised. So, if I could interject,
yeah,
that was not uncommon for the time period. So, actually, even today, most cop cars have a shotgun mounted like that, but it is locked now. So there's a mount on it, and then there's a mount that goes around the barrel to hold it upright like that, and then it's locked. But back then, they had the mount; it wasn't locked. And you know, that was not terribly uncommon for the time period.
Okay.
Yeah. Not that I've been in a bunch of cop cars, but I've been in a couple.
No, fair enough. I mean, like, I knew that they had rifles, shotguns in the cop cars, but, like, for my whole life, they've always been locked.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, probably, yeah. I'm sure stuff happened. Probably.
Yeah.
Like this.
So, like this. So, he conceals the weapon in his jacket, casually starts walking down the street. Smart. The cop cars pass. They don't notice him. He's home free. He can get out of there. He heads across the street, goes to a phone booth. He looks in the phone book, looking up the number of a Sarah Connor J, and then he rips the page out. We then see a woman. I'm guessing this is Sarah Connor J. Or I'm just going to call her Sarah from now on. But I'm assuming this is Sarah. And she has this cool, suave look. She's riding a yellow moped scooter thing. It's an interesting style. Is that like a popular moped scooter that was like out in the 80s? Or is that just something for this film?
No. Totally. That was kind of a thing there for a while. There was a whole scooter culture back then that... especially for people in more urban areas like Los Angeles, would be more of a thing. And yeah, so I mean, that was, you know, she was rocking all the latest stuff and hairstyle and the whole thing. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I'm all for scooters by all means. I ride a bike most of the time, like bicycle, because I don't have a scooter, but it's so much faster to get around. And, you know, at least with a bicycle, I can weave in and out of traffic in London. It's like your own personal roller coaster every day. It's terrifying.
I can imagine. Oh, my gosh. In London traffic, you're riding around. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I'm, like, there, and then, like, a double-decker bus just casually pulls up next to me. And I'm just like, if I, you know, slip slightly, high bus or high curb, there's no in between.
Yeah.
There's very little room for error. So she gets to this burger joint and asks the statue to guard her bike, calls the statue Big Buns, and he's holding two burgers. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of, like, is it the Little Big Boy burger? Is that what it's called that has the statues out front?
Bob's Big Boy, yeah.
Bob's Big Boy,
that's the
name.
So that's a very famous restaurant in Los Angeles. It's still there to this day. And he's the big boy, and Bob's Big Boy was the name of the restaurant. And, yeah, and so that location was very it's still very famous. If people go to Los Angeles, you can still go to the Bob's Big Boy and go get yourself something to eat. But that was the kind of the thing. It's an iconic, you know, kind of fast foodie kind of place in Los Angeles. There used to be more, and there used to be ones across the country that would have the Big Boy. But that one is kind of the original and still quite popular.
Nice. Yeah, because I remember one.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it was the same necessarily chain, but like a very similar chain, it might have been the same thing. But I think it was in Louisville where I grew up, and they had like the statue there, but he was only holding one burger. So maybe he got an update.
Was it Shoney's?
No, it definitely had like Big Boy in the title. Oh, okay. I don't think it was Shoney's.
Shoney's was another one that kind of was a Big Boy kind of model and usually had the kid holding up something. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely was.
You can still go to that restaurant. So.
Shoney's. But yeah. Interesting. Nice. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she goes there. She's there for her shift. And cool. She's late. What's new? We see on the punch card, it is Sarah Connor. I'm going to give myself a win because it's rare. So, well done me. Wasn't the hardest thing to predict. So, meanwhile, outside, we're in a completely different setting. We see Arnold, and it's menacing music time. And he's wearing a bedazzled brown and black coat. He walks up to a car. He punches in the window. He gets in the car, hotwires it, and away we go.
Yeah.
Cool. That's all there is to that.
Yeah. It's great music for that kind of somewhat sinister music for all that. Yeah.
It is sinister. I really like it. It's a beautiful soundtrack. I mean, look, he's understood leitmotifs very well.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah is a waitress. It's a busy day. We see a rude asshole that says, "Honey, can I have that coffee now, please?" Meanwhile, listeners, if you need a reminder, she is carrying 3 plates of food. Buddy, wait a minute. Like, you can wait. You can send a reminder, but you don't need to be rude about it. Like, you know, even if she's walking by, you can just be like, "Hi, can I get some coffee when you get the chance?" Right? Like, you can remind them, that's okay, but don't be rude about it. When you see that she's actively doing something, if she's not doing something, still don't be rude. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, you can ask for it now. Just, you know. PSA. Treat people who hold your food kindly.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. Treat your server well. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't piss off the people who have to handle your food.
Exactly.
So at the table, all the plates are wrong. The clients whose food it is, they're rude as well. He's like, "Well, that one's mine, but I didn't have fries." Nobody's telling her who has the burly beef. They are not a helpful group of people. On a completely different table, while she's having a conversation with these 3 gentlemen, obviously frazzled, some lady is like, "Miss, I'm ready to order now." Like, lady, what did I just say? Take a note. Just wait. Be patient. You can see she's actively doing something, like talking to another human being about their food order. You can wait. I'm sure she'll get to you. She places the food down. She spills the drink all over him, apologizes profusely. She's trying to dry this guy off, asking if it's real leather. Luckily, it isn't. He's fake. And it's fine. I would never buy real leather either. So, like, you know, props to him. So while she's doing all of this, some kid decides that he's gonna take a surprisingly round scoop of ice cream and just drop it into her pocket.
Yeah.
And it's chocolate ice cream as well. And she looks at the kid like, "What the fuck?" The friend walks up and is just like, "Well, put it this way, in 100 years, who's gonna care?"
Who's gonna care? That's right.
That was a lot of a scene. Like, yeah. I feel so bad for Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. She's kind of put upon. She's not, you know, it's setting up a lot of things for the movie. She's put upon. She doesn't have a lot of control over her life, right? These little kids even getting one up on her, right? So, yeah, you really do feel sorry for Sarah. And you wonder, you know, where does she fit into this scenario with you've got a murderer, Arnold, and you got another guy who's just randomly stealing things that he needs, but so far he hasn't murdered anybody. But he is evading the police, so he's not a, you know, quote-unquote good guy. And then we have Sarah now in the story, and who is really, you know, you might say down on her luck. She's in a kind of a crappy service job, and is not treated real well.
No. Yeah, it's not the greatest. As someone who works in hospitality currently to pay some bills, that one hit close to home. Like, there are many times that people are rude. It's not nice. Treat your servers, bartenders, treat them with kindness. At the end of the day, like, if you treat them with kindness, they're going to serve you first. Yeah. Like, whenever I'm bartending, I'm more likely to go to someone who's, like, patient, like, understanding that, like, hey, I'm swamped. Like, I'm getting to as many people as I can get to. Mm-hmm. Rather than people who are like, hey, me. Like, right. You know, hey, if... I understand if, like, you raise your hand just, like, to get their attention, be like, hi, like, I would like a drink, like, if we're at a bar situation, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a busy bar, you kind of raise your hand, and you're like, hey, I'm, like, I'm just waiting, right? It's completely fine. If the bartender has clocked you, be patient. If they forget about you, like, after, like, you know, they serve, like, maybe one or two other people because there might be a little bit of a queue, if they still haven't come to you, you can ask them again, like, just be like, hey, like, I'm still here in case you forgot about me because things get hectic.
Mm-hmm.
But just be kind. Be patient. You will get your food. You will get your drinks. Just wait sometimes. So anyway, that public service announcement aside, we seem to have a lot of those in this episode. You know, run
But that's
from
good,
the
though,
cops.
Because essentially this if we're looking at this from a story standpoint, you're building the story. And the reason you're spinning off into these things is because the story is building. It's not just kind of boring. There's a lot of weird, interesting happenstances that are building towards something.
There's a lot of things, and yeah, most of this episode is building. I'm excited because I legitimately haven't seen listeners past the point that we are recording to today. So anything that you hear in this episode is what I have seen in this film. So,
and I would say you are, knowing the rest of the story, you are almost at the end of the first act. So we have generally things have three acts. And you're almost at the end of the first act, which is giving you background on all the people involved and setting up the situation. So, yeah, this is where you're at.
There we go. See, I may not have seen films, but I have a general understanding of how stories work. So we're at the Alamo. It's a sports shop, and they have guns. So they are having a store-wide sale. And, hey, we're with Arnold. What are we buying? Let's take a little look at the shopping spree, shall we? We have a 12-gauge autoloader. It is Italian. You can get it in the pump or the auto style. Ooh. You can also get a 45 long slide with laser sighting. It's new, state of the art. This means that, you know, when it turns on, you see a little red dot where you want the bullet to go. You cannot miss. We then ask for a plasma rifle in the 40-watt range. That one's not available. He doesn't have that.
Just
tech.
What you just see, buddy. Just what you see.
Yeah. Just what you see. We don't have that type of tech here at the Alamo. But we do also have the Uzi 9mm, ideal for home defense. I have no idea what I just read. None of those things meant anything to me. I've shot guns in my life. Legitimately, I've understood what pump and auto is. I know what a laser sight is. I'm so confused on most of it. I'm not like a gun person by any means. I do enjoy shooting them on a range from time to time. Growing up in Boy Scouts, it was always fun and something that we would do. Definitely took my dad by surprise the first time that he saw me shoot.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So we had gone to
I think from Kentucky, down in Kentucky, they probably shoot a lot. So
I grew up in Louisville and my family never like shot guns or anything. Okay. Like we're not gun people at all. And, you know, so I had shot them through Boy Scouts. So maybe it wasn't like the very, very first time that he saw me shoot, but like definitely like the first time that I ever remember him seeing me shoot. So we had gone to Philmont and at this point I was 16. And for anyone listening that doesn't know, Philmont is a huge scout ranch in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, where scouts go and they do like 10, 12 day backpacking trips out in the wilderness. And it's super fun and a lot of great memories from it. But one of my favorites is one of the first few days we went to one of the camps and they had a shooting range. And one of the things that you could do there, one of the activities, was you could create your own shotgun shells and then you could go shoot those shotgun shells. Mm-hmm. It was a fun little thing. And we went there. My dad took his five shots, missed all five. I went up, shot my five shots, hit all five, came back. And my dad just goes, huh. Never realized you were so handy with a gun. And I was like, I've been shooting since I was 12 at Boy Scout camp. Like, it's just something that, like, has happened. I've just ended up with a good eye. Like, that's all it is. And also, like, I played tennis. So, like, my hand-eye coordination is already like, you know, I have a fair, you know, toot my own horn, but, like, I do have fairly decent hand-eye coordination. Mm-hmm. So, like, it definitely, there is what is the word that I'm looking for? A cohesiveness to it?
Okay.
Sure.
That word like works. Word. I'm not
that
sure.
That word works. I don't know if it's the word that I was looking for,
yeah,
but
I don't
it
know.
Works. So, anyway, these are the guns that we're buying. Just as a quick recap, we're getting a 12-gauge autoloader, we're getting a 45 long slide with the laser sighting, and we're getting the Uzi 9mm.
Uzi 9mm.
Yes.
We have to do an Arnold impersonation, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll have
Uzi 9mm.
Uzi 9mm.
Beautiful. Yeah. So we then get told it's a 15-day wait on the handguns, but the rifles he can take now. Arnold loads the gun. The owner's like, you can't do that. And Arnold just goes, wrong. And then blows the guy
blows
up.
Blows the guy away. The murderer. Arnold the murderer.
I'm content with you being a murderer, right? Like, in this context, please don't go be murderers. That's not okay. So, in this context, in this film, Arnold, I've accepted that your character is a murderer. Mm. Great. My only question, you already knew what you wanted. You knew where everything was. Why did you have to make this guy show you where everything was? Just blow him up, rob the store, and leave? Like,
yeah, true.
You know.
You're right. But again, I think this is all building the story. So it sets up a dynamic because you've got three people that we're intercutting, right? So we've got Arnold, we've got Blondie, and we've got Sarah. And you can see how different they're approaching things, even on this kind of base level. And Arnold wants these guns. He gets them. And yeah, he takes them and, you know, he's got to skedaddle and go on his way. Yeah.
He's got a mission. Mm-hmm. We're not sure what it is, but there's a mission. He's on it.
Yeah.
So before we continue, we're just going to take a quick intermission and then we'll come right back. So, we're back, and we see Blondie, and he was getting a gun, cutting a gun? Was that what he was doing? I couldn't quite tell what he was trying to do.
So he took the shotgun from the cop car, and then he got like a hacksaw or some type of saw. Anyway, he was cutting the stock off the gun so that way he could, you know, and cutting the barrel off as well, I believe. So you have a sawed-off shotgun, essentially. So he was minimizing the length of the weapon for, you know, to be able to hide it. So,
okay. Now, you may or may not be able to answer this question. Why do people saw off part of the shotgun?
So you saw off the stock just to make it shorter. Because this, you know, usually you'd put the stock on your shoulder or what have you. But, and then you saw off the front again to make it shorter so you can keep it in your, you know, under a coat or hide it better. And then also it's, you know, historically it's a close range kind of a situation. So, you know, it, shotguns have, I think it's called a choke. And so whenever you shoot it, it has all these little pellets that fly out the end of it, right? And then the pattern of those pellets is the choke. And so if you saw off the barrel, it's just going to go everywhere. So anything in front of you is going to get shot. It's not going to go very, you know, it's just going to spread out and obliterate whatever's in front of you. So that's kind of the nature of, I think, especially in movies, is to have a sawed-off shotgun because it's a super effective way of stopping anything that's within, you know, 5 feet of you, because it just blows, you know, pellets from the shotgun everywhere. So I think that's more the idea, was for concealment and for effectiveness at a close range would be my guess. They never explain it other than, you know, that in shortly after he cuts the stuff off, I think he puts something on it like a sling, and he puts it over his shoulder. So it's
yeah,
under his coat.
Yeah, he kind of puts a sling on it, mm-hmm. hides it under his coat, mm-hmm. and then walks out into a busy street.
Right. So you ever see like well, because you're in Europe, so whenever you go places in Europe, sometimes you'll see security, and they have a rifle, a sling rifle over their shoulder and so forth, so that it's usually hanging, and then they can just and pick it right up and shoot it. And that's the idea, is it's all ready to go.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I was just curious. So he walks out on the busy street. That's the end of that lovely little scene. Mm-hmm. We just see that he now has a sawed-off shotgun.
He's preparing. So that's the, so there are your two scenes with Arnold and with him are, okay. So
how are they preparing?
Well, they're getting weapons, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're preparing for something. So
yeah,
they've arrived. They've gotten clothing. They're moving through, you know, the area. They're now acquiring weapons. And mm-hmm. for Blondie, it's a concealed weapon. For Arnold, he doesn't seem to care.
You don't give it to
him. So, yeah. So that's, you know, it's kind of just preparation, I suppose, for whatever's to come.
Whatever's to come. Let's find out. Speaking of Arnold, he also rolls up to a phone booth. There's a bloke there with a beard and wearing a light blue shirt with dark blue overalls asking his girlfriend to come get him, and his bike broke. And he's like, oh, I don't care what you're doing. Come and get me. Arnold proceeds to shove him out of the way. Honestly, I'm fine with this. Like,
he didn't kill him.
He didn't kill him. And he was rude. Didn't care that, you know, the girlfriend was possibly doing something of importance.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what she's doing. So, you know, he could have been kinder about it. But I also, you know, not too much. Because, like, I understand. You're in a stressful situation. Your bike just broke. Like, mm-hmm. you know, understandable. But still, don't really mind that much. But it is funny because he just goes, hey, man, you got a serious attitude problem.
That's right. I think the interesting part of that, it was funny, right? There's a lot of little funny bits throughout all this of just kind of like weird interactions and funny happenings. But
yeah,
the interesting is that guy kind of is, you know, if you or I were to come upon that person at a payphone, we wouldn't jerk them out of the payphone, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's also what it's portraying in the story is Arnold is not acting or reacting, obviously, like everybody else. And this guy would yeah. be intimidating person to meet on the street and just say, okay, I'm going to use this phone now. You know, phone booths aren't a thing now, but back then that was fairly normal.
Right.
But you would never do that. Right. And so now Blondie. Apologize.
No, I didn't even clock that you said his name. So Blondie.
Blondie is sneaky. He's sneaking around. Everywhere he goes, he's sneaking.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold, there's nothing. He doesn't seem to be following any rules. He doesn't seem to be worried about anything. He's just doing what he needs to do. And I think that kind of sets up an
like
interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you were saying?
Oh, no. That's the interesting thing about the two of them is they both seem to be heading toward a goal that's similar, right? Because they're doing the same things, right? They're acquiring weapons, they're acquiring things and getting prepared for something, but they're doing it in totally different ways. One is the Blondie is very, very sneaky. Arnold's character is very, very straightforward and overt, right? He's just doing what he needs to do at that moment in time, as opposed to worrying about people seeing him or catching him or anything like that. He doesn't even seem to care about it.
Nope.
Yeah. But that's all part of this, bringing the story forward for these characters. So as you're watching it, you know, not only is Arnold a murderer, I think everybody in your mind, even though it's happening fairly quickly, is building, you know, what this person is, right? We're building up to what, well, that's got to be the bad guy. And then Blondie, you're like, well, he seems to be a bad guy, but he's not acting like the bad guy is acting. So, yeah.
Definitely. So Arnold is also looking for Sarah Connor, but he stops his finger on Jay above Anne, whereas Blondie stopped his finger on Anne, which makes me think that Arnold might have a different Sarah. We'll see. So in a neighborhood now, there's a cute little blue toy semi-truck, and it gets run over by Arnold in his car. Arnold don't give a toot. Not even to the children. Arnold gets out and walks up to a house. There's a small dog tied up outside. The dog ain't happy. And Arnold kicks. Sorry, he doesn't kick anything. He knocks on the door like a polite gentleman. It is opened by Sarah Connor. Different Sarah Connor than earlier. Arnold then proceeds to throw the door open, aims his new.
Oh, wait. Before he does that, he says something, doesn't he?
He says something.
Yeah, to the lady who opens the door. What's he say?
Oh, did I not catch what he said?
Uh-huh. He goes, are you Sarah Connor?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He does confirm.
Uh-huh.
He does confirm that this
are
is Sarah,
you Sarah Connor.
Connor?
And she said yes or something affirmative, and then boom. Boom. Punching the door open.
There's a gun with the laser that he uses. He points it at her head, proceeds to shoot her. And then he empties the mag out from, like, you know, 5 feet away and shoots her a total of 6 times.
Yeah.
This is the first time I wrote down the phrase, he don't give a toot, because I was like, it is a bright and sunny day out, and right. It is broad daylight. He don't give a toot.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. But the interesting thing is that whole scene, and I won't tell you why, but is foreshadowing for things to come later.
Ooh, okay. I will keep this little nugget.
Everything you mentioned in that sequence foreshadows something to come.
I look forward to it. Let us see if I can figure out what that is. See, like, you would think that me knowing that this is foreshadowing will help. I don't think it is.
No, because, you may forget. I mean, that's the
That's the thing, is, like, I forget, or, you know, I do understand storytelling in the sense, you know, I am an actor. Like, I do a lot of plays. I'm working on some other projects as well. So, like, you know, through all of my experience and the experiences I continue to have, I learn more and more about storytelling. So, like, I do understand storytelling quite well. So, like, I always know that whatever's happening in this first act is foreshadowing to the future.
Yes, yeah.
I just very rarely am able to figure out what it is. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this is what they meant then. But it's not often.
Yeah, and I guess interject, this is a tight script. So if you watch some movies, you know, there seems to be, you get, they're interesting in their visual, but they're not necessarily pushing the story forward. And this script is tight. Almost everything that you see, there's a reason for it to happen and a reason to push the story forward. Whereas some movies, you know, they kind of, you know, go off on these tangents that don't really help the story that much or aren't relevant to the story. Whereas this movie overall, in this first part that we're talking about today, very tight script, and everything relates to things on down the line or to what the story is about. So, yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I'm talking to writers or trying to write, there's a phrase that we always use of, you know, is there fluff?
Right.
And it's just like, hey, is what is being said actually important in some way, shape, or form? or does it not actually contribute anything to the story? Like, if you take it out, will the story still work?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a interesting, like, you know, balance that you have to have. Like, you have to have a little bit of, like, space. You can't just have everything be expositional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be able to tell the story, but also, like, you don't want to bore people with fluff. So what we always say is, like, write the fluff. You can always cut it.
Right.
But, you know, it can mold. But so, you know, in a first, second draft, it's going to look very different than your final draft because you need to start with all of the ideas and all of the fluff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I do think this movie does a very good job of cutting all of it out. Like, everything seems very succinct, even if it's like a, hey, here's a 20-second scene of what Blondie's up to real quick. He's just shot off, he's sawing off a shotgun, like, you know, and then he's off. Like, great, 20 seconds, but it's an important 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely am getting that sense.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Where we're at, Sarah Connor, who has had character, that Sarah Connor, is heading onto her break, and I just go, I don't think she's coming back. She's coming back. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. We're not losing Sarah yet. So I was wrong on that one. Her friend grabs her and says, come on, it's about you, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into the staff lounge and the news is on. And it is confirmed that Sarah Connor, mother of two, age 35, was brutally shot to death this afternoon. And the friend just goes, you're dead, honey.
You're dead.
And Sarah
honey.
Looks a little bit worried. But also is kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, it's that mixture of a of a feeling for Sarah. So
yeah, no, weird, little- right? So can you imagine if you put yourself in that position? Like, if you were working, and the next thing you know, on the news that somebody with your name has been brutally murdered, that would be weird, right?
I'm sure it would be weird. I think what would make it weirder is I'm pretty sure I'm the only person with my name.
you'd be surprised. You never know.
Yeah. Just like, at least I have Googled my name before. And whenever I Google my name, I'm a solid, like, most of the first page of Google.
Yeah.
Bing or like any other search engine. And like, I've scrolled, I found multiple other people with the name Ankit. Like, that is a super common name. But when you add my last name as well, then it's a little different. And then when you have my full name, legitimately nobody else even comes up. So,
yep, Sarah Connor. Not so different. We've actually seen her listing in the phone book for the time period, in the phone book, a couple of times now, and there's multiple Sarah Connors, so...
There is. I do wonder if they just picked up a phone book, or if that was a prop that they made for the film, or if they just picked up a phone book and just found a random Sarah Connor and like maybe changed a few of the, like, you know, numbers and things so that it didn't officially match up to anybody.
I believe it's a prop, and there's actually a mistake. I'm positive it's a prop. I'm trying to remember the story that I read about it. So there's a mistake. If you look at the page that Blondie has versus the page that Arnold has, they're different in a way. But they shouldn't be, because essentially they are from the same source, right?
They're in the same area
between the two scenes being shot. I can't remember what the changes off the top of my head now, but I'm pretty sure there's something about that. So if you go back and you were to freeze frame on those two things, you'll notice that they're just a little bit different.
Oh,
I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I do believe it's a thing.
Well, I know what I'm doing after we record. So we're at a construction site and we see Blondie. He's hot wiring a car. And I was like, oh, it's not going well. No, he was just trying to get the radio working. Fair enough. So he's watching a big machine move around and crush human skulls. And then I was like, wait a minute. That doesn't seem right. And then I was like, wait, is this the beginning? Turns out it's the beginning. So I was like, aha, we're back in 2029 is where we're at in this scene. So what we see is we see Blondie and a woman, and they are in battle, and they are crawling away from the large automated machine, which is firing plasma blasters at them. There is also a hovercraft, which they are attempting to avoid. We then see them run through a battlefield. Beautiful green screen. We see Blondie arm a grenade and he launches it at the machine right in front of its wheel.
Track.
Is wheel the right term? Track. There we go. Right in front of its track. So it lands right in front of his track. The machine goes over it and I was like, it's a dud. The lady then throws the grenade and then proceeds to get blown to smithereens by one of the plasma blasters.
Yeah.
She dead. Goodbye. She did not last long.
No.
Well, maybe she did. She's not one of the human skulls that were just
right,
crushed.
Right,
so
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she did last long, but not in terms of this scene.
Not for the scene, yeah.
No. She wasn't really around much for the scene. So then Blondie's grenade does work. It does blow up the whole machine. Cool. And then Car Ex Machina has appeared and Blondie rushes in. So they drive away from the burning wreckage of this explosion while they are being chased and shot at by the hovercraft. And Blondie drives over a jump. And might I just say, the guy shooting the gun better have a broken back
right.
with the bending he just did.
Mm-hmm.
For context, ladies and gentlemen, he went backwards. And looked like he was in half.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah, very rough.
But then he proceeds to shoot the gun.
Mm-hmm.
He's fine. It's the adrenaline. He ain't fine. Because the very next thing that happens is that the car proceeds to flip over
right.
and then the hovercraft leaves them alone instead of finishing the job. Rookie mistake. It's going to come back to bite them in the butt probably at the end of the film.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. You never know. Never know.
This is my, like, a little bit of a hint of my prediction is that it's going to come back and bite them in the butt at the end of the film because they didn't finish off Blondie.
Right.
So Blondie screams in pain. This jolts him awake back in present day.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole bit was backstory. This is when I clocked that this whole bit is black
backstory. Yeah, flashback.
I didn't realize that it was a backstory and a flashback. So I was like, interesting. And I paused and had a thing. And then I continued.
kind of an interesting aside on the car with the mounted laser. I think it was a laser of some kind that where you talk about the guy bending backwards and then flipping over and so forth. So this is all kind of a post-apocalyptic kind of environment that we're in at this point during this fighting and so forth. And there's other movies in the time period that actually used that motif as well as that kind of vehicle. So there's a movie called Road Warrior. It's called Mad Max 2. It's out of Australia. And there's a vehicle just like that, but it's not laser. It shoots darts, but it's a guy standing up in the back and then they have a whole chase scene with it and so forth. But that all seems to span from, there was a show, on television called Rat Patrol, was a World War II TV show. And they had Jeeps that were like that with a machine gun in the back that stood up. And so it's really interesting looking at kind of their choice for that is it all harkens back to all these other things, right? The reason they probably chose that look was because number one, it's cool, right? Who doesn't want to stand up in the back of something and fire a gun randomly into the thing?
Hey, and I will say when I was playing Halo, it was either that was my job. Mm-hmm. Occasionally they let me drive, but my friends didn't trust me behind the wheel very often.
Well, you flip over like they did in the
Yeah, but I was also bad at the shooting, oh, so okay. There really wasn't a win-win situation. So really they just depended.
So I just think that was a visually cool kind of way to represent war because it had been represented so many times in popular culture at that point that was kind of the choice. And the unfortunately the guy bending backwards was just cheap the cheapness of the production because it was a dummy who was attached to the thing. But
it was definitely a dummy.
And then when they rolled the car it was a dummy. So you know, it was all just the cheapness of the production at the time. Yeah.
Hey, you do what you got to do. Yeah, it was a dummy, but it was a convincing dummy. It,
fairly convincing, except for the whole, you know, yoga move there.
Again, it's possible that a human body can do that. It shouldn't, but it's possible.
Right, possible, but not probable, yeah.
Right, right. Again, the human body should not do that. If your body has done that, two things. One, I'm very sorry. That sounds painful. And two, if you haven't already consulted a doctor, please do so immediately.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't think they could. They're in the middle of a battle, so.
Yeah, like, the doctor might have been one of those skulls.
Like,
oops.
Blondie, take me to the chiropractors.
Blondie's trying to not die. So he is back in present day, and he drives off after composing himself.
Now, so again, it's a massing thing. So the Arnold character's already got a station wagon, and now Blondie's got a truck.
Blondie has a station wagon in the...
Oh, he's got a station. They both got a station. I thought he had a truck. They both have station wagons, which is interesting. Yeah. You're right.
They both have station wagons.
He has a station wagon.
Which makes me confused occasionally because I'm like, who is who? And like, you'll understand what I mean, where the confusion comes. Mm-hmm. And you will probably be able to answer my question in terms of that confusion.
Okay.
So back with Sarah and her friend, they're getting ready with a concerning amount of cords and electronics in the bathroom.
That's funny.
The phone rings. Mm-hmm. Sarah goes to answer, and we have a voice on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes, first, I'm going to rip the buttons off of your blouse one by one.
Mm-hmm.
I have an issue. She's wearing a t-shirt.
Who's on the phone can't see her. They don't know.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, the asshole pointing it out years later, almost 45 years later. I'm the one pointing this out 39 years later. I guarantee you I'm not the first one pointing this out. And if I am, society has been slacking for the last 39 years. Come on, that joke was right there and you didn't have to try hard.
No kidding.
He then goes, then run my tongue down your neck to your bare, gleaming breasts. She seems amused. And then slowly, slowly pull your jeans off inch by inch. She's laughing. Apparently it's someone named Matt calling for Ginger. I'm not convinced that it's a Matt calling for Ginger. This sounds like some saniacal, messed up thing that, you know, someone would call and say to her before killing her and murdering her. That seems like the world we might be in. I'm thinking this might be Blondie. We haven't seen him murder anyone. But hey, I don't fully know why he's here yet. I have an inkling, but I don't fully know why he's here yet. Maybe he's just like, I've come back to kill this one specific person. Nobody else needs to feel my wrath. Whereas Arnold's like, I don't care who feels my wrath. I don't know. I'm just saying. So he then continues and it gets like even more. He is just like, and then lick your belly in circles further and further down and then pull your panties off with my teeth. Turns out it is actually someone called Matt.
Yeah.
And Sarah just goes, who is this? And poor Matt. This poor man, the panic when he realizes that he has been talking to Sarah. Oh, you feel for him. You feel for the guy. But let this be a lesson learned, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you know who you're talking to on the other end of the phone.
Right.
Double check that you're talking to the person you mean to be talking to.
Is this Sarah Connor? And then you can go into it.
Just make sure who you're talking to. Just ask them. So he does want to talk to Ginger. I'm assuming this is Ginger's boyfriend. And Ginger is informed by Sarah when Sarah just goes over and goes, creep. And I was like, well, that's mean. Matt's trying his best to woo his woman before their date. It's not his fault that you picked up the phone. Mm. But credit to Matt. He may have been traumatized. He may have been panicked. He does not waver.
Oh,
and
no.
He begins again once Ginger is put on the phone.
Yep. He picks right back up.
let's go, Matt. I'm here on Matt's side. Like, you know, he doesn't let it knock him down too hard. Embarrassment, definitely there. Gets back up again. Well done. So, just a fun little scene. We're at a police station, and we're about to meet some new characters. Mm-hmm. They're going to come into play, I feel, a bit more in Act 2 and mm-hmm. Act 3. But at this police station, we meet Ed. He is given the case of Sarah Connors. She was shot 6 times less than 10 feet away with a large caliber weapon. Ed says that the glasses work, implying he doesn't want to hear the yapping of the assistant. So I felt bad for the assistant. I was like, the assistant's just trying to brief you, man. But also, Ed might have had a day. And sometimes you have a day and you accidentally take it out on people that you don't mean to take it out on.
Mm-hmm.
So
now those, if I can, so those two characters. So one of them is Paul Winfield is the actor, and the African American gentleman, and then the other guy is Lance Hendrickson, right? So these two actors. At that point in time, Paul Winfield was already known. He was a known guy, not like a big star, but he was a known actor, had been around for quite some time. Lance Hendrickson was in Piranha 2, one of James Cameron's first movies, and he also is in a bunch of other James Cameron movies to come. So they're kind of friends. It's kind of like the Bill Paxton thing again.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, Lance Hendrickson.
Definitely. My acting teacher told me one time, like, hey, you know, it's going to be rough, don't get me wrong, but you get one little bit of a break, and then if people like you on set and you do a good job, they might call you for a small role in their next one. They might, like, you know, just be like, hey, like, you know, you're reliable, you're a good presence on set, then, you know, let's keep getting him work, even if it's small roles here and there.
That's the way it works.
It's networking. It's a fun time when it's networking, and for me personally, like, networking is like, I'm going to a party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, like, my parents are just like, their networking events, very different. Like, or like even some of my friends, because like my parents are, you know, further along in their careers, but like other friends who are like, you know, still in the early stages of their career, it's just like their networking events, very different. They're like, oh yeah, like I went to this business, you know, retreat meeting thing, and I networked with people. There was like conferences, lots of talks, a lot of people chatting, things like that. And then I'm like, yeah, I went to a birthday party. Like, different places.
That was my networking event right there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I went to a birthday party. Like, you know, but like you go, but it's a networking thing. Like, yes, you're there to have fun, but like at the same time, you're networking, and it's just different worlds that you run in and how different circles work. So anyway, we learn that there's also a second dead girl, and Ed is just like, what's the point of all of this? And both girls are named Sarah Connor.
Sarah Connor. How interesting.
Very interesting. We never see the second Sarah Connor that gets blown to smithereens, but she's presumably dead.
Mm-hmm.
But then Ed says, one day pattern killer. And I don't know what that means. I think it's something about like serial killers and like how sometimes they have a pattern. Don't know if it'll play. One day seemed weird. Some name would have, like, one name pattern killer would make more sense. One day just, I don't know. It might allude to something a bit later. It might not. I have no idea.
So now you, the interesting thing about what you, the way you set it up there is, okay, so we've seen Arnold kill one Sarah Connor.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Blondie basically prepare the same as Arnold, except in a slightly different way. And we still don't know if he's not a murderer. So who killed the other Sarah Connor? They don't say, but it happened in the same day. So you know that this is something that's happening very quickly. And so I think that's where that line comes from, one day pattern killer, because there's a pattern, two Sarah Connors, right? That's emerging, and it happened in quick succession. So did Blondie kill the other Sarah Connor? Or did Arnold kill the other Sarah Connor? We don't know. At this point in the movie, so there's ambiguity to those two characters at this point. So your mind can go either way. You can say, okay, Blondie killed him because they both came in, they both had a mission, they both carried out their mission. So that's where you can go with it, or you can, you know, go other ways. But I think that's why that line was mentioned in that way, because
okay,
of the short timeline and the fact that there's similarities. And so then to me, that leads your mind to say one guy went one place, the other guy went the other place.
Yeah, that would make sense. See, I'm still not 100% sold on Blondie. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to think that he's a good guy, but I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. You said, up in the air.
We just haven't been told yet. We haven't been told how we're supposed to feel about him.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Now, the interesting thing that we've divulged so far is Blondie is having these flashbacks or flash forwards to the future. But we haven't seen Arnold have those.
No idea where Arnold's from, but we can have a sense that Blondie was in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm assuming Arnold was, but there's no guarantee.
No guarantee yet.
So the girls, we're back with them, and they are getting ready for their night out.
Yeah.
And they are ready. Sarah is looking for Pugsley. Ginger checks the messages. She finds Pugsley.
Mm-hmm.
Pugsley. It's a lizard, and it's on top of the cupboard. Not sure how it got up there, but like...
I think they can climb. Cool. They got claws, so...
I do think that they can climb. Like, I know that lizards can climb. I don't know if that specific type of lizard can climb.
Right.
I don't know what specific type of lizard it is. If anyone listening knows what type of lizard it is, let us know. No clue. I am not a lizard connoisseur expert. So, haven't studied the lizards. But... there are a few people that have called and left messages. Sarah's mother called. Sarah's not too fussed about it. And then Stan calls, said something has come up and that he can't make it tonight. He does feel really bad. He'll make it up to her and will call in a day or so. Pretty much he's canceled the date that she was about to go on. Sarah is upset about this news, which is understandable. And Ginger calls him a bum, going, he has a Porsche, but it's Friday. How can he treat you like this?
Mm-hmm.
Ginger, calm yourself. Things come up.
And Ginger's ready for, you know, she's ready to go out. It's Friday night.
Hey, Ginger is a slightly good supportive friend, I think. I'm still... it's interesting. But, like, she's ready to throw hands for your friend. And, you know, we love the support. And we love that positive reinforcement of friendship. But, you know, like... Maybe take a step back. Maybe something legitimate did happen. And, you know, Stan might legitimately just feel bad, but it could be a simple thing. We don't know what he does for a job.
Yeah.
It could be a simple thing of something really urgent happened on the job, and he just had enough time to give a quick call, say something came up. Like, you know, he might offer up a explanation when he calls tomorrow.
Yeah, later.
Like, he's not saying that he's not going to call. He will make it up to her.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Like, it's never fun to cancel a date, but life happens sometimes. So, Sarah seems to understand this as well. She's like, I'll live. It's okay. Pugsley still loves me, right? Pugsley, he's a lizard, has no reaction. Well done, Pugsley.
Well done, Pugsley, yep.
Sarah decides to go to a movie, and she walks out, and Matt is outside, and he scares her, and I just laughed. I do like that, you know, even though Matt is, like, you know, horrified, it seems like all three of them are close enough to where, like, it's kind of like a laughable thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll just laugh about it and move on.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's nice to interject a little humor and kind of daily life kind of a scenario going on there.
Yeah,
as opposed to all the murder that's been happening in other areas of the story.
There has been a fair significant amount of murder in other places.
At least, at least five people murdered more than likely. So,
five people. Well, let's see. Let's do the count. And we have the guy at the beginning who got his heart ripped out.
Mm-hmm.
We have the store owner,
mm-hmm.
the gun store owner.
First, Sarah Connor.
Oh, the future Sarah Connor has died.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the two present-day Sarah Connors. So, yeah, we're at five deaths so far in this
movie. And we don't know the other two thugs' injuries you know, we didn't see, they got pushed off screen or whatever. So they could have been killed by their things.
They just started stripping.
Right, one was running, running away.
And then it cut away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if they got killed or not. Yeah. So we can say 5 confirmed deaths.
Confirmed, yeah.
5 confirmed deaths. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she heads to her moped. She looks down both ways. Down a very eerie, quiet parking garage, and I go, well, someone's definitely waiting for her. And then she drives off, and we see that she's being followed by, is it Blondie? I couldn't tell if it was Blondie or Arnold. I think it was Blondie that followed her out.
Do you want me to tell you, or you want me?
I mean, like, I don't know what happens next, so, like, we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Mean,
I'll let you find
we'll
out.
We'll find out.
We don't know. Yeah. That's the cliffhanger for the first act.
We don't
right
know.
There.
I think it's Blondie. I cannot 100% tell you if it was Blondie, because it was a dark shot.
Right, yeah.
So, it was dark. His face was in shadows. Both of them have similar hair mm-hmm. in the film, like... You know, and you didn't see much of the body. All you could see was like a rough outline of the face. So it was just hard to tell. Mm-hmm. I think it was Blondie. But yeah, this is all that I have seen of the film. I'm very intrigued. As we were saying, I definitely feel like I'm right on the edge of like the end of Act One. Mm-hmm. So that's why I stopped here. Because I was like, all right, now that we're following... I feel like the next scene is going to be interaction between two of our three characters that we have been following.
Right, yeah, they've all been separate at this point, right?
But, they've all been separate. Yeah. I had
and
a
we
feeling
have the
that
cops
the next
now.
Scene...
We've got the cops
Yeah, we
as
have
well.
The cops. Mm-hmm. We have 4 different storylines that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. I feel like 2 of these storylines are about to intertwine.
Right. Everything's going to converge at some point, right? So
it has to. That's how mm-hmm. stories tend to work.
Yep.
But... I don't know. I've also been wrong about that before. I think that I know how a story is going to work, and I'm like, this is going to happen. Nope, it doesn't happen. So, yeah. So, I will leave you all with this prediction of what I think is going to happen. Here's what I think is going on. I do think that the lady that gets blown up in the future that we see is Sarah Connors in the future, or potentially, like, Sarah Connors' granddaughter.
Interesting.
Or daughter. Because Sarah Connors also looks like she might be in her late 20s, in her 30s. You add another 45 years to that, you know, she's looking to be in her late 60s to early 70s. And if she was moving at that speed and that pace for the 10 seconds she was around in the future, she is a very spry 70-year-old. So,
yeah.
I like Sarah Connor is connected to the person that gets blown up in the future. That woman that gets blown up with and Blondie sees. I don't know in what capacity. I think more likely it's Sarah Connor is like the grandmother or mother or something like that. But that being said, I think what is going to happen is that Blondie is going back. Somehow Sarah Connor is wrapped into a situation that happens sometime between, I'm guessing we're in 1984. So sometime between 1984 and 2029, something happened where machines had AI knowledge and were able to come to life on their own and operate themselves. So I think Sarah is initiated potentially what happens tonight, or maybe it's the next day is what sparks that. And that's what sparks this entire war. I think what is happening is that we have Blondie who has gone back in time to try to stop Sarah from doing whatever or save Sarah in some way, shape, or form. I think there is an element of trying to save Sarah, but I think that it's also possible that Sarah is the one in the future that comes up with the idea of how to then stop the robots. So I think like she's kind of responsible for the beginning of these robots and the end of it. What I'm thinking is that she comes up with some way to stop them. And that's why Arnold is sent back in time to stop her because he is part of this like robot army cyborg, you know, blowing people up thing, mm-hmm. and, you know, murdering humankind. He has not shown any kindness to the humans, as we have seen. So I don't think that he's on the side of the humans. I think he's on the side of the machines. I think he has been sent back to purposely murder Sarah Connor, but they didn't tell him specifically which Sarah Connor it was, whereas Blondie knows which specific Sarah Connor it is. So he goes back in time to try to save Sarah Connor.
Interesting.
I think all of this comes to fruition in a way where everyone like meets up. The cops are there as well. Not really sure how they loop into all of this, but I feel like they get into this and then there are hurdles that Blondie needs to jump through. Not really sure how the cops are fitting into all of this, but I feel like all of this happens in the end. At the end of the day, I think Blondie and Sarah Connors both do survive, but I do think that, you know, there's some way that Arnold can go back to his time, but not also fail his mission. Like, they'll come to some type of compromise kind of deal. This is what I think is happening. Have no idea how much of that is going to be true, and I respect that you can't really say a whole lot.
No, I can't say anything. If you don't want me to give it away, I can't say anything.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to me ramble for 2 minutes.
That's fine.
But this is roughly where I think things are going. We will see. Bob, thank you so much for joining and for all of your insight. It has been very fun. If people want to find you on the internet doing different things, find your show, how can they do that? How can they find stuff that you're working on?
Oh, they can go to staticradio.com, or they can just look at the any of the socials with @staticradio.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure and leave a link to that down in the description as well, so that it's easier for listeners to find. But Bob, thank you so much for joining. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to the next episode where you will be joining again, and I will have watched more of the film, so we'll have more to unpack. But until then, thank you so much for joining, listeners. Thank you so much for listening, and until next week, we'll catch y'all later.
I'll be back.
Hello, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Post Finale. Post Finale was created, hosted, and produced by me, Ankit Madeira. Our editor is Pranav Nair. The art is by Jared Rother, and the music is by Ankit Madeira and Megan Hutchison. If you like our show, please hit the follow button and that notification button to stay up to date on our content.
Please leave a rating and a review. It helps us immensely.
Don't forget to follow our social media to keep up to date, or subscribe to our Patreon if you want bonus content.
Links of our social media and Patreon are in the episode description.
Thank you for supporting our content. Be sure to come back next week for more shenanigans from Co-op Forge.
New episodes for Flip the Scripts is every Friday, Seattle Across the Pond every other Thursday, and Post Finale every Wednesday.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Bye now.